Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hi, it's Jackie Cation, and you are listening to the Dork Forest. The website's jackiecation.com, dorkforest.com, thedorkforest.com if you like a determiner. Let's do the credits. Patrick Brady's going to fix this audio and video. Vilmos works on JackieCation.com. And Mike Rickberg sang the song with his wife, Sarah. He composed it, and he will sing his version of the Mexican hat dance at the end of this show. Thank you so much for listening to the Dork Forest. Here's a scoop. I'm doing stand-up online. A lot of Zoom shows will eventually go back on the road. Sign up for my email list. It's easy to get off. It's harder to get on than it is to get off. And no harm, no foul, if ever bored. JackieCation.com. Sign up for the email list. You'll find out about my weekly Zoom shows and stand up on the road eventually. You may donate to the show if you would like. I would like. Sure, I would. There's PayPal, Jackie@JackieCation.com, and there is a PayPal button on both DorkForest.com and JackieCation.com, and there's Venmo if you like Venmo, Jackie-Cation, oddly enough. If you have listened to all of the shows, go to dorkforest.bandcamp.com, I think. The Dork Forest has a Bandcamp page. You can listen to a lot of ones that are free from pre-2009 when I started pre-recording. And then there's live episodes that cost me a couple of bucks, so I charge you a couple of bucks. There's also some stand-up. There's a story album that's very exciting there. And other than that, I have a lot of merch in my garage. Feel free to order if you know anybody who doesn't have any CDs or the DVD. And you can follow me everywhere at Jackie Cation. Let's get into the show. Hey, I'm Jackie Cation, and I am in my living room, ladies and gentlemen. And I'm not in my living room. I've lied to you again. I'm in my garage. That's where things are happening now. It's raining outside. Los Angeles has gone into lockdown. My new dog is like, why are we out of doors? What's happening? And with me is LA comic and tour de force. What the heck? Let's just give everybody credits. Wow. My father has always encouraged these
dynamo.
Things. He's a dynamo. It's Chris Fleming, you guys. Chris Fleming, welcome to the program, The Dork Forest.
Oh, my God. Thank you for having me. And thank you for making such a clear beginning of the podcast. Usually people have a very slippery way of starting them. You know, you get mic'd in the driveway when you walk up, you know, and then like you don't know.
There's like a minute and a half of, hey, don't forget to donate, folks. And there's merch. And then we get into this. And then
a story about climbing under your porch and stuff. And I don't know if I'm supposed to laugh or not.
Oh, God, that's right. That's the intro riffing. Nobody needs that. The Dork Forest. I want to find out what you want to dork out?
I'm sorry. I think you're I'm glitching a little bit. Say that
might
one
be
more
me.
Time.
Do you have an unstable internet?
Yeah, it is, but I think
it's great. I could totally see and hear you. Chris Fleming, by the way, stand-up comic. It's at Chris Fleming. Fleming on Instagram?
That's exactly right. At Chris
and
Fleming.
At Chris Fluming, because of hilarity, on Twitter.
Yeah. Yeah, I think a banker took at Chris Fleming on Twitter in 2011, so I had to go to that.
Yeah. Watch this banker. Lateral move. Done. So yeah. you have a live stream show on March 23rd called Through the Baleen, which is that thing with whales.
Yeah, it's like their hair teeth. Yeah. And it takes place inside the belly of a whale, Jackie. Yeah.
Oh, does it?
Yeah. I'm doing these virtual shows are so they're so grim, you know? So I did one of my first one. I decided to take place in like kind of like a Kate Bush type forest, like this kind of whimsical forest, even though and then this next one, I thought, you know, inside a belly of a whale. And the third one I'm going to do if quarantine continues is it's going to be called Chris Fleming Stuck in a Fence. And I'm just going to be stuck in a fence, I think, completely, like, almost
just
like a
your
Winnie
head
the Pooh.
In between sort of the fence?
No, I imagine my body all akimbo, kind of. Just like,
interesting.
And people come visit, you know, different, you know, and that I think will be the third iteration of my of my live streams.
I think it's great. Here's a story that has nothing to do with any of that. Kevin Grady, our neighbor kid when we were little, Stucky said I could fit my head between these two fence posts, and that's what I pictured. Because he stuck his head between those two fence posts, and then we had to call
the
fire department.
Yeah,
as you can imagine.
Yeah, did it do damage to Kevin's frontal cortex or occipital lobe?
I don't know. He was working with a full deck right away. Then he was an 8-year-old boy, so I think
he sounds like one of those kids that wears shorts year round. Kevin Grady.
I don't think so, but he was. I had a cousin named Joel Mushatowski, who used to do something. Ooh. Speaking of goofball, young boys, he used to love it when my older brothers would pick him up and throw him against a wall.
Okay. <That's>...
I have no idea what Joel Mushatowski's doing these days. He's easily in his 40s.
What year was this?
He was 12th century. It had to be the 70s. Okay. Yeah.
Getting thrown against a wall. Was that his way of kind of submitting to alpha males to be part of the culture?
Very possibly. Maybe he just loved all-star wrestling. We don't know. We don't know why.
Being a victim, yeah.
But I will say, so live stream, how are they going to see this you in the through the baleen? Do they have to find a whale and sort of tune to that?
No, there's a Zoom link. There's no work on the audience part. They don't have to go anywhere. Oh. I am in the belly of the world. That will be the location.
That's
of the set.
Excellent. That's excellent. Yeah, no,
I can't ask. That's a good idea though, to ask more of
people
the audience.
People to find a waterfront, and then if you could turn your computer on. But so it'll just be a Zoom link that they can find on your Twitter or something.
That's exactly right. If I'm as organized as I'd like to be, I would have that in my bio for either Instagram or Twitter. But I can't imagine I do yet. So
feel free to Google it, you guys, because it's going to be a week from today. A week from today, the Zoom show live through the live stream through the baleen.
My mom sent me a link asking if this was the link to tickets to send to her friends, and it was certainly like a virus link. She found something that was not at all what what my show is.
Yeah, so, find Chris himself and go, hey man, where is it? Because I do a show every Sunday, Sunday Comedy Services.
Do you?
Yeah. Yeah, just a Zoom show where I work on my new album, and the only way people can find out is to either be on my email list, jackiecation.com, easier to get off than it is to get on, Rangers, or if they like see it on Instagram, the poster.
Yeah.
Cause I do it the hard way. I don't have a ticket link. I just do, you just Venmo me something like $5. And then I send you five, then I send you a link, and then, or PayPal, because some people are international and have the Venmo. But Chris, we've eaten up about 5 minutes of your dork out time. Let's get to it. Yeah.
Could I ask you one more question about,
please?
You're such a great stand-up comedian. When you, I mean, I'm sure people have asked you this, and I don't mean to get it too in the weeds, but do you find the Zoom shows to be bone chilling?
No, I found Minot, North Dakota in 1995 bone chilling. I found Rosemont, Illinois last, I think it was December, on a Wednesday. That was bone chilling. Some people are like, Zoom shows aren't real. And I was like, have you been to Victorville? Arguably also not real. Just going to tell jokes. Hope people like it.
That's great. Do you mute them? Do you mute them, or do you?
I don't mute them. I tell them to mute themselves if they're doing dishes, or they. And I say that I might mute them, or sometimes Andy, my husband, will run tech. I said, if you don't know how loud you are, you might be muted, but don't take it personally. You just forgot that you had the TV on while you were watching my stand-up comedy show,
which
is a lot and not unusual.
Yeah. Yeah. Or if you have like a loud husband or something.
Dogs, kids.
Yeah. Right.
I live in Van Nuys, which is a great place to learn how to be a helicopter pilot. It turns out right now.
I got trained there in tutoring in 2011 for SAT tutoring. Yeah. By a very corrupt company in like a, very...
It wasn't my people, was it? Were they Armenians?
Very Irish. No, this man was very Irish.
Oh, those are my other people. I'm half Irish and half Armenian.
There we go.
Okay. Yeah. The joke is that I was genetically modified to pick up a rock on someone else's property.
I don't even know what that means.
That means old school peasant stock is what it means. This doesn't break down. I don't know what you're... You seem super white. Are you sort of Northern European, UK-ish?
I get I read as Canadian, but I'm Irish.
Nice.
Yeah.
I love that you read as Canadian, because that is a wonderful way of putting that.
I read as vegan too. I'm not vegan.
Oh yeah, you do kind of. I get a little bit of that.
I got in your email last minute. My reading comprehension is super poor, and I just saw that video was going to be a component. So I'm sorry. I'm freshly showered, and I look a little bit like Trent Reznor right now.
Right, you do look a little bit. Here's the thing: is I have not showered in about a day and a half, so people are getting. But I have the filter on Zoom so that it's so far to the right that it removes your nose. So it corrects all sort of aging processes and everything.
It just gives you completely blank eyes. Yeah, white eyes. Yeah, that's good.
I have this. You do read as this, and this was one of your dorkdoms. So let's start with it, which is puppetry. You read as a guy who likes puppets. I like puppets. I'm not made of stone over here.
You're reading me. Would you have read that had I not included that in my interest?
Maybe. I would have said, I would have recommended, if you said, I'm going to Minneapolis in early May, I would have said, go to the May Day parade, because they have giant puppets that are in the parade.
Yeah.
Do you like puppets?
I think I've spent most of my time at Joann Fabrics in my adult life.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I make what you need to know about me in general, Jackie, is that even when I say like the things that I'm like kind of, I guess my dorkdom, you could call it.
Yeah.
I'm not an authority figure on anything in the world. I know so very little. I'm passionate about many of these things, but
enthusiasm is what we're looking for.
I'm so ignorant. I'm just like painfully ignorant. But yeah, no, I make a lot of, you know, in my videos, I use a lot of, I stopped kind of, I did characters for a while, and then I still do, but like I kind of grew tired of that. And so I started needing to I started sketching stuff and then being like, oh, I need to actually build this from the raw materials and have this like create this kind of universe building type of creature. And so I've been doing that for, I've been kind of obsessed with that for the last couple of years.
So you've been making your own characters, making puppets essentially.
Yeah. And they're pretty bad, but,
You know what? I bet you that there's a first draft in puppet making as well. So, so you go to Joann Fabric and you're like, this is fuzzy. I want to make a fuzzy puppet. No?
That's exactly what's right. That's exactly what I do. Like there's all these, I spend a lot of time in the, I'll just roam the aisles and see if there's something that looks at least like the base of a shape of something that I, and then I go to the fabric station and they have like amazing faux furs. And like, so you can make these like hideous little fake dogs and things. And like, I made a fake super fruit once, that I claimed was discovered in Cleveland called the Morton. And I bought this styrofoam egg and I like put these little bubbles on it. And I took like, you know, 3 weeks making it, but it was like, I don't know. It's really gratifying.
Sure. Especially in quarantine. Are you kidding me?
I know. No, exactly. I know. That's exactly right. Something that anything that like, that's why I want to get into stop motion, because of anything to kind of fill the moments.
Right. That stop motion. Are you kidding me? Talk about a clock eater. That is something that will take days upon days. What about here's my question. You keep talking about videos. Have we buried the lead? Do you have a YouTube page or a Vimeo?
Oh, I do. I do. Yeah. That's actually YouTube.com. Just search me on YouTube. I actually don't even know what
You know what? I'll find it and put it in the notes, because are you on the video showing people how you're making the puppets and stuff?
No. I like to keep those as my filthy little secrets. I don't like to, I don't like people ever know.
This is the safest space in the world, my friend. You've socially arrived.
I like people not knowing. I love the not knowing of it all, you know?
Oh, okay. So, yeah.
I think it really comes down to Labyrinth. I think I just became obsessed with the movie Labyrinth. And I think that's kind of what did it for me.
David Bowie?
Oh, absolutely.
There we go. That's Andy Ashcraft, my fella, made me watch it. It is a spooky, weird little movie. It is a weird little movie, that Labyrinth movie. Yeah. I think somebody's dorkdom. I think it was Virginia Jones's dorkdom was that movie.
Yeah, I would hope so. I mean, it's something. I mean,
do you have it on like toddler rotation in the background?
It's
ever? Do you ever do that?
I watch it like I don't even enjoy watching it, but I have to watch it. It's one of those things. Like does that make sense? It's like I became obsessed with like why it exists and how it exists and all that stuff.
These are excellent. I don't know how it got made. How did it get made?
That's right.
You're in a pitch meeting and you're like, David Bowie's willing to do it. And they're like, okay, we're in. Is that it?
And supposedly, I guess one of my favorite parts of it is that David Bowie's manager was like supposedly looking for him for like 6 months and didn't know what he was doing. And then he like came back and he was like, hey, check this out. Look what I've done. And his manager was like, why did you do this? You're a rock icon. Why did you do this? And he was like super upset about it. Yeah.
Oh, and it turns out wrong, because that movie is beloved.
Oh, it's so inspiring and so inspired. Yeah, yeah.
It's
demasiado, as the Spanish would say. It's simply too much. That's why it's so good.
Demasiado. It is too much. That is a great word. If I remember correctly, it's about a little boy who goes into like a fantasy world and
a little girl. You're so
close.
There's
a child.
Yeah, a child, exactly. Exactly. That's exactly right. And that's all. Yeah. And she, her. Oh, no, you're right. Sorry. There's a baby boy who gets stolen by David Bowie. He gets snatched.
That's right.
I'm so sorry. Absolutely right. And then Jennifer Connelly, the sister, has to go retrieve the boy. And there's like musical numbers that David Bowie wrote. And there's like live chickens for some reason in a lot of the shots. Mixing animals with puppets is just one of the most satisfying things. The way they look at each other, oh God, it's like, it's so messed up.
It's got to be confusing for like the live animal to just come up to like a chicken puppet or another animal puppet going, I'm pretty sure there's a person inside there. There's a hand. I can smell the hand.
Like that show that I've heard about, or maybe I dreamt that this existed about like, people wanted to like study tigers, so they would make like a tiger robot and have cameras in it and send it into the wild. And I don't think it like worked very well.
No, it sounds like a, first of all, great way to lose a robot.
I think John Lovitz voiced the tiger. Yeah, yeah. It just didn't work. You got Lovitz in there?
Oh my God. You get Lovitz in there. The critics are not going to like it. I'm just going to tell you, the critics are going to be a little harsh on Lovitz.
I was thinking about, you ever think about like just someone just randomly deciding to write a biography on John Lovitz or something, you know, like you could just do that.
You could. Matter of fact, someone start a separate Wikipedia page, just John Lovitz 2, where everyone could just add to it. And a lot of people don't know this about John Lovitz, but he was raised in the Appalachians in the 1912s.
And I think I heard that. He was a longshoreman for at least 50 years.
He initially got work, I think, with WPA. It was they were like, well, we're trying to help the fishing community, so we're going to put John Lovitz in on this.
And he was a rascal when he was always stealing daffodils as a boy. That would be really fun just to like write a biography knowing nothing about like Jack Nicholson, just like writing it.
Oh my gosh.
It.
This sounds like something that I would do without any sort of irony, where I would be like, what? No, what do I know? Because
I think this happened. No one told me, but I imagine.
This is the second episode, I think, in a row that David Bowie has come up. And
that's good.
And I've consistently mixed him up with the guy who did White Wedding. and
Idol.
Yeah, right? Billy Idol. Last episode, I couldn't remember his name. And just now I couldn't remember his name, but I did remember White Wedding, which triggered your memory.
It took me about 20 minutes to remember it, though.
It took a while. And here's the thing about podcasts is that every second counts. And there's no... We couldn't make it. But I do... Is it tantamount or paramount?
What's the word?
It's tantamount. I like tantamount.
Is tantamount a word?
I love tantamount. It's tantamount to which is a parallel to something, right? It's tantamount to saying I hate you.
That's right.
Or it's a parallel to saying we will marry one day. Or what? I mean, I don't know. But here's what I want to know about Labyrinth. So there are puppets, though, because there's live chickens.
It's mostly puppets and David Bowie having to lock eyes with puppets and talk with them. Oh yeah, I'm afraid so. He rules over like maybe 40 goblins, and he just is like he's just kind of bored in a castle, and he just kind of looks at the clock and just.
Is that why he stole the baby? Because he was bored. I feel like that is why demons steal babies.
Boredom. Yeah, I mean, what else?
Boredom
are you
gonna and do? Lonely, yeah. And they're just like, I just have my minions. Maybe this thing will be different.
Right. I mean, I guess it's one of those things that is a lot more nefarious in like a post 9/11 world if you actually like try to dissect it. But like, there is a reason that he steals the baby. I'm so bad at plot. I don't really ever. I'm more about like.
No, if I remember correctly, there's not
vibe.
A lot of plot there. It's essentially no. Adventures in babysitting, taking place in Narnia.
And there's one scene that I watch over and over again that was shot on green screen, and it's called the song is called Chili Down, and David Bowie wrote all of the music, all of the actual songs for it. Okay. And Chili Down is like these marauding, furry beasts, and they switch heads, and they like switch body parts. They're kind of like Arizona Swingers, kind of is the vibe. And they come across, and Jennifer Connelly kind of approaches them in the woods, and like they try to get her involved in the gang, and like it's like a hot springs. It's like the people you would encounter at a hot springs, right, on vacation that want to talk to you. And
Bowl of Keys.
And it's amazing. And they sing this incredible song, like one of the best songs I've ever. It has no business being that good. It's just like it's just such an embarrassment of riches, the whole film.
Thank you. I wish I named these shows because we would call it an embarrassment of riches. So they're switching parts via puppetry. Like, are they puppet parts?
I guess the making of it wasn't green screen. It was black screen, and they this velvet black that they had to use to shoot because it was so. And they had dancers that were wearing the different puppet parts, all dressed in black with obviously their faces obscured, and they're kind of dancing. It looks really bad. It looks terrible. It looks like a Tim and Eric sketch now. But like the way that they. They manipulate, like their pelvic girdles will come off and switch, and it's just like it's magical. It's really, really haunting, and it really fucked up a lot of kids. Like people, like I guess, were very, very disturbed by it.
It's interesting. Do you remember what year Labyrinth came out?
Oh, I couldn't tell you. Probably late 80s.
Okay,
I would think.
So in for the durate. So I'm not above actually Googling it. So
okay, good. Okay, good. Let's guess.
Talk amongst yourselves, rangers of the Dork Forest. Think,
you can have your audience fill the space. That's brilliant. I bet it's 84 or 87.
See, and that is interesting because that is those 1986, right. Damn there it. In the middle. Hot spot, sweet spot.
The median.
June 27th, 1986. So I guess it's a cancer, you guys. Or I have no idea, actually.
that's the year of the Pekingese, I think.
Yeah. 1987, that was a year that I was going to so many movies, and that really? Was not one of them. That was a big year for movies.
What movies did you
in the 80s? I would have seen, and I was seeing some real weirdo Magoo movies, man. I was seeing I remember Repo Man. I remember that movie The Shogun of Harlem Shonuff was in The Last Dragon. Okay. Have you ever seen The Last Dragon?
No, no.
Oh my God. It's outstandingly terribly wonderful. It is about a black kung fu fighter named Bruce Leroy. Okay. So it mocks blaxploitation films.
Right.
And
right.
It is a delight. Yeah. I think Vanity is in it. Veracity? That can't be your name. Why isn't there a dance singer named Veracity instead of Vanity?
Anyway. Which dancer are you talking about?
I believe that it was Vanity. And Vanity. Again, talk amongst yourselves.
This was the year I was born, 87.
Oh, 1986, 98. You were born in 87?
I'm an 87.
Because it was June 27th, 1986, I believe, is what.
Okay, I wasn't around.
Just, you were a twinkle. You were a twinkle.
I was a concept.
The Last Dragon came out the same year as Repo Man, because I told my friends to go see Repo Man, and it was a hit. And I was like, they're like, Jackie's an amazing, she could pick these indie films. This is so great. The next one I picked was The Last Dragon. Nobody, nobody happy. Nobody happy with me. It was so bad. And also,
You were the scout. You were the movie scout in your group. People would say, "Jackie, what are we going to see?"
For 12 seconds, I had a glorious moment because I picked Repo Man.
Oh, that's all. That's your only. Okay, I see.
Yeah,
I see.
1985 is when The Last Dragon came out, and Repo Man.
My sister was born that year. Yeah.
Oh, there you go. There you go. Yeah. And there was this other one called. It was not Time Bandits. Time Bandits was very respectable indie movie. Remember Time Bandits?
No, but it sounds like what I'm imagining is the concept of Clock Stoppers with or that Adam Sandler movie is what it sounds like. Whenever I hear time in a film name, I imagine it's someone stopping time. And
Time Bandits is a Terry Gilliam movie.
Ooh.
Right? So he's got all kinds of weirdo cred, except for I think he just said that he doesn't enjoy someone who doesn't have anything to do with him. Like, I think he made a bad...
what do you mean?
I think he doubled down on some sort of gender or sexuality thing.
Oh.
Was that him? And where you're just no,
really?
Shh. Hey, old guy.
No, but I think that was probably John Cleese. John Cleese every day says something comes
where
out.
Where he's doubled down. Where he's just like,
where he like doesn't believe asked. Bisexuality exists.
Nobody asked, John. You're good.
Yeah, John.
You're good.
It's okay.
I understand. If you're trying to get laid, that's the only person you should care about their sexuality. That's it. It's just the person that you're asking if they'll squish with you.
Terry Gilliam, man, how can you be a surrealist and have any issues with?
And he may not. He may not.
Progress.
This is a classic.
I think we should probably cancel him anyway.
You want to just cancel him right here?
Yeah.
I'll tell you something. Because here, the movies like Labyrinth and Time Bandits, they are super weird. And people love them. And I am entirely always confused. I don't know if I am just, I mean, I'm a whole person. I'm not going to lie to you. But I sometimes get super literal. And I kind of like being John Malkovich, beautifully done.
Saw that for the first time. I had never seen that before until a month ago I watched it. It's so good. It's so funny.
I feel like if you were going to give someone a basket of DVDs, if that was still happening.
I'm doing that.
Labyrinth, Time Bandits, and being John Malkovich would be great. Yeah. And that weird Mulholland Drive movie.
Oh,
so
I watch one 30-second clip of Mulholland Drive over and over again, and it's when the witch comes out from behind the dumpster in the diner. Like,
was that in the last 45 minutes? Because that's when I left. I missed the end of that movie.
It's immediate. It's like within the first 10 minutes, and it's so haunting, and it has no business being in there. Yeah.
I think it's because I saw Rumblefish back in the early 80s as well. Remember Rumblefish?
No, I like the sound of that. Rumblefish.
Well, it's based on the book. The guy who wrote That Was Then, This Is Now, and The Outsiders.
Oh, yes.
I like that I went first to That Was Then, This Is Now. That's so funny. But the Rumblefish movie was with Matt Dillon and Nicolas Cage and Lawrence Fishburne, actually. Wow. And Chris Penn and Mickey Rourke. I remember it being with Mickey Rourke because it was by Coppola. Coppola directed Rumblefish.
So that's a lot of siblings of famous people in that.
Well, Chris Penn. Yeah, Chris, well, Chris Penn.
And isn't Matt Dillon someone's sibling?
No, no, Matt Dillon's, I think he's the famous sibling.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah, yeah. And, but Mickey Rourke was the lead, and Coppola, it was shot in black and white, except, for it, the
except
goldfish.
For Matt Dillon. Oh, okay, okay.
Oh, good guess. because the goldfish are who you're supposed to relate to.
Ooh, that's nice.
And so it's deep, right? It's real deep. But I had a whole feeling when I was watching Rumblefish that Coppola was sitting next to me, just hitting me on the arm, going, "Am I weird? Do you get it? Look how weird I am." And that's what I had with a Mulholland Drive as well.
Totally,
sometimes.
Total. It's. I mean, I went to college for theater, I became very disillusioned, or I became very upset with how abstract theater can get, because you can hide behind abstraction, and if it's like, if the audience doesn't get it, then like, who's to say it's good or bad? And that's like a really
right. It's a great defense. You can justify yourself all the way to the bank, or not the bank if nobody's into it.
Right.
But I will say that I want to like these weird movies. You know, like Labyrinth. Like I see what they're doing. It's sort of like horror or scary movies.
Oh!
You love them?
Oh my God, Jackie, I'm...
That's right. That too was on here.
I am a... I think it's like for me, because I have a lot of anxiety. It's like, I think that it's like watching a horror movie is like taking my anxiety to the dog park is kind of what it's like, you know? It's like, it's like giving it something to do while I can kind of take a little seat, you know?
That is epic analysis of horror movies, because you're taking it out for a walk. You're letting it out. You're bleeding it off, kind of.
If there's something to focus, something kind of imaginary or whatever, a scenario, very clear, linear scenario to freak out about that you're not a part of. It's like bringing it to daycare, and then you can kind of take a little breather. It's so nice. I think that's why I like them, at least.
Oh, that is fascinating. I know.
No, I can't handle them. I freak out though. I do. If I ever watch
you scream.
I scream at night. I have night terrors afterwards. It's my Irish Catholic thing. We let it all out in
oh, because I can't watch anything tense at nighttime, and I can't read anything tense at nighttime. I got to read. No. I got to watch something light, even if it's a murder mystery. It has to be like a monk. It has to be like that. It has to be so sort of
yes.
Do-do-do-do-do-do.
You need
shalub
someone
was
in there.
Killed.
You need shalub slipping on a banana peel. Yeah, yeah. I get that. Yeah. I cannot afford to do it, but I do it. That may just be a destructive thing, but do you like them during the day? Horror movies?
I can't do horror movies actually at all, but I can do some things that are slightly more tense during the day. The only thing that I can sometimes read horror comic books.
Oh, there you go.
I don't know why I can't read horror fiction, because the prose, my brain makes it too real. Yeah. And I can't watch movies because it looks super real. But for some reason, graphic novels, I could read Lock and Key.
Sometimes as things get more like literal, I guess, you know, when I read The Shining, for example, it's so realistic. I'm like, certainly Stephen King has imagined murdering his entire family if he's writing this and has fantasized about this.
Right.
It's
not
hard
just
to,
once either.
It's like people, I always had such a freaky thing with Marilyn Manson, and people were like, "You're closed-minded. It's just an act. It's just art." And then like you find out like, no, he's just a very bad man. And that's like, it's hard. I don't really know the distinction anymore.
Right. It is hard when you think about someone who has created this world, and you're like, oh, do you want that? Is that something you're into?
Right.
I was discussing something like ethics in video games with my husband, who's a game designer. And
cool.
And he was talking about the bad depiction of you know, there's like in Grand Theft Auto, just a real basic thing is that they create Grand Theft Auto. You can beat people up and rape them and do all kinds of horrible things.
Can you actually do that?
I think so. And then there's a bunch of video games where you can do even worse stuff. that's just out there, like in Linux world, right? Where it's just freeform.
And he was
talking about, because there's two different philosophies about that. And that could be true with the horror movies too, is that does it bleed off the need to do that?
Does it feed
to it and sort of not justify it, but make it normalize it, right?
Oh God!
And get this, psychiatrists haven't decided. It turns out it could go either way. And everybody, what are they
making the call today?
Tonight,
7 p.m.
Time.is, you guys. Time.is. There's a giant digital clock there.
And we're 3 hours away. I missed the whole gaming world since Nintendo 64, and just
okay.
how
you
how
checked out.
I checked out, and revisiting it just like through watching it, like in very small amounts. Like it's like how like you need to have like your character needs like health insurance now. You gotta take them to get blood panels done and everything.
They're simpler. I don't know if you remember the Candy Crush. Essentially craze of 4 years ago or whatever it was.
I remember because I was in a social security office with a man that I was a caretaker for a little while. And one morning there was a woman, it was silent in the office, and there was a woman on her phone playing with her phone up full. It almost was like a Dolby surround system. I don't know how she was amplifying it so much, but like every 2 seconds, it was totally silent. And every 2 seconds, her phone would just say, "Juicy." Every like... For maybe 30 minutes. A juicy.
I have never understood why people have the audio on at all. I have a Switch and I'm playing Animal Crossing, not that much, 2-3 hours a day. And so I'm also playing a phone game, which is like Candy Crush, which is and all that is a match three. It's just a match three bejeweled kind of situation, right? Where
Match three? Where
it's a puzzle where you're matching three colors of whatever thing. Right. In Candy Crush, it's three yellow bananas.
Oh, so it's like a slot machine. You need to have like, okay.
It's a little bit like that. And so.
All I know is gambling. That's all I know.
Oh, interesting.
No, I know.
But there's no need for the music. And this, of course, makes me a monster in general because I don't listen to a lot of music regularly.
We were talking about this briefly before we started recording. This is
interesting. Because another one of your dorkdoms is, wait for it, Rangers, Stevie Nicks, who I just learned was in Fleetwood Mac. Bam!
My parents, they...
We're the same age.
No, of course you're not. I'm sorry, but my parents.
Oh, no. I was actually born to be everyone's parent. I've been your parent since I was 14.
I'm sorry. That's not at all what I'm saying. But that just reminded me they did not know who Queen was recently. I was talking. I mean, I guess they were busy raising me, but they didn't. I think they checked out, and my dad's only ever liked two songs that I've played for him. He's only ever commented on, and they don't listen to music. I mean, my mom used to blast.
What?
Phantom of the Opera, like around the clock, but
likes musicals.
But not since then.
What are these two songs? Let's get into this. Chris Fleming, by the way, it's Chris Fleming on Instagram and Chris Fluming on Twitter. And that's how you will find out about his live stream show on Zoom for March 23rd called Through the Baleen. Anyway,
you are the most professional podcast host I've ever. No one has ever promoted me, done what I've actually set out to do on any podcast except for you. You're like it's like a morning radio spot.
You know that Meryl Marco was on the show, and she used to be the head writer of Letterman, and she's written a lot of books, and she's a wonderful person and hilarious. And she said that when she came over to the house to do the podcast, I was the only one who offered her a beverage.
Wow!
I was like, what's happening? Like, not even a glass of water, because I have a tiny amount of craft services when people come to the house. Just a selection of sodas. Maybe a beer if you were to enjoy an adult beverage.
That could be a
some chocolate,
thing.
Some cashews.
Because any male, I don't think men are very hospitable.
Well, they're not really raised. It can happen. It can happen where they're because my husband incredibly thoughtful and very very good host.
Same with me. I was raised to be a hostess above all else. I was that's my only true skill is being a hostess. But it's a rarity, I think, and I've never seen it in podcasts. Hosts, at least with
Well,
with men,
get on it, people. If you're, I wrote a thing for my podcast for my blog when I had a, and I still, it's still there, you guys, Tumblr. But
I love
and
Tumblr.
It's how to have a podcast. And one of the things was feel free to offer somebody something. They're taking time out of their life to create content. It's sort of like the chain of we're all working sort of for free.
Yeah.
Like you're coming on here and I'm going to give you, you'll get a Ranger t-shirt and a couple of bucks for lunch,
$30K.
But nothing crazy. Like, and then we put this out for free and I could do a Patreon where people could donate, but, and people do, but I have a donate button on my website and people do donate monthly and that's very sweet. And then some people just give me, you know, like $100 a year, live it up. And then other people don't
like
have $100.
Like an aunt or uncle just sending you. Yeah.
Please feel free to, every card you send me, there has to at least be a 5-spot in it, please. And even if it's from like a friend, a birthday card, I want there to be a dollar in it.
Oh, it's so true. Yeah.
Just when it falls out? Oh, what are you, nuts?
It's so nice. Oh, the way it drops. Oh, yeah, it's fun.
So who is Stevie Nicks? And why do you like her?
Oh, wow. Okay. I mean, I'm one of the freaks that prefers her solo career to Fleetwood Mac. I'm not a real big...
Oh, interesting.
I'm not like a... I don't know. I'm not gonna kick Fleetwood Mac out of bed, you know? But like, when it starts playing, I'm not gonna turn it off.
For eating like, crackers, right, Cracker? Anyway, that's the end of that joke. I can't not do the end of that fucking joke. Anyway, go ahead.
It's like... Yeah, Fleetwood Mac, it's kind of like... It's like... whatever. But yeah, no, Stevie, oh my God. I mean, just she's like a very, she has this great mixture of dark and light. Like she is rather gothic, I know, by nature, like very kind of witchy. But her essence is so vibrant that that's not like there's like nothing spooky
about
it.
There's no death. There's no death there. It's life affirming.
Well, there's like mourning of the former self, which is something I love. She's constantly.
What does that mean?
Unless I'm misunderstanding her lyrics. And again, I have really piss poor listening comprehension, but she's often like, she has a whole song about it, about kind of, saying goodbye to her, you know, her youth, the last, that version of herself and being at peace with that. And the way she has such grace with singing about, you know, love lost, or like even about less if like her friend has taken her lover, she has a song about like, oh, it's okay. Like we'll make it through this. A landslide, obviously. And there's just so many, she's just such a graceful, visionary person who, I mean, Edge of 17. I just adore her. And
Edge of 17 is the name of the...
That's one of her songs.
That's a great name because it's evocative of what the hell she's talking about. I mean, you can tell kind of just by that title that you're like...
Tell me
more.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
She, I remember that, sort of, right?
I think that one was about John Lennon after he died, because she was a huge fan of John Lennon. She has some great stories about Prince. Prince, while she was on her honeymoon, I guess, she was like driving to Santa Barbara with her husband and Little Red Corvette came on, which is a Prince song. Mm-hmm. And she was like, oh, I love this song. I want to like pull over. I want to like get Prince to help me make a song like this on her honeymoon. And I guess like the legend is that Prince may have like helped her record like, Stand Back. My favorite Stevie Nicks song. He like, I guess came in the night and just like played the synth, laid the synth track down in like a La Quinta or something. And then just like hit the road. And she has this incredible, and she talks about it in concert when I saw her at the Forum a couple of years back. And she's just...
That's so cool.
She's just so sexy. She's just like the absolute sexiest person.
I have to look up more of... Because here's the thing. So when I was first introduced to Fleetwood Mac and Stevie Nicks as people and as a band and as a thing that I should look into, there was I believe my guest, whose name is escaping me.
That's okay.
Because I tend to remember dorkdoms and not
people.
We've
had 613. So.
Right. There's a lot of episodes happening. And so the But I think that, don't forget the 200 that are in the vault, you guys.
800, 813.
Because what I ask people who talk specifically about a certain singer or band is to make me an 8-song Spotify list.
Oh, that's brilliant. I could do that for you. I would totally do that.
Different songs, because I have to tell you, she did do it. And I listened to it and I was like, oh yeah, I know most of these. But do one of her solo work.
Or even the ones that she wrote. I mean, the ones that the Fleetwood Mac hits that are particularly sexy. That's she's just got this desperation. It's just, oh my God.
I vaguely remember that episode now. And the things that I know, here's what I know about Stevie Nicks. First of all, her name is neither Fleetwood nor Mac. It was two couples that made up Fleetwood Mac, correct?
She was with Lindsey Buckingham in the beginning of its Fleetwood Mac's genesis. I don't know all the I'm not a Fleetwood Mac.
Well, and then there was a lot of sexy times that happened between different parts of those people.
I think every permutation that could have happened, I think.
Right. Because it was the 70s, man, or the 80s, or I don't know. Everyone was in there. Whenever anybody says that, I was like, was everyone in their 20s? Because I remember my 20s. And I was like, what do you want to do? All right. And can we use a condom? That was my only question. So
that's good. That's great.
And we lived, you guys. And I lived to tell the story. So I would love actually a Spotify lineup of such a thing, Chris Fleming. That would be kind of neat.
Yeah, I would love to do that. I mean, a little mixtape. That would be. Also, isn't it what you just said reminded me? Aren't the people that write so much about about free love and stuff? Aren't those the people that weren't even involved in free love? Isn't that kind of the whole peeking through the blinds type of a thing?
Possibly. There's always, the thing about threesomes that's always the one that I was in was incredibly just kind of awkward.
You're right.
It just feels like somebody's not getting some, first of all, because you can only do so much.
Too much mental math. Yeah.
So I think that there's always a feeling of left outedness in orgies that, and if you're all drugged up or drunk, you're going to be sloppy crying in a corner at some point about it. Right. And it just feels, it actually feels vaguely pathetic. Now, polyamory.
That's different.
That feels like there's intent and everyone is concerned about everyone having a good time. I used to do a joke about how I couldn't have sex with a lot of people because I do want everyone to have a good time. And I'd be like, you need anything back there? And so this sort of imagery. And
I canceled on a foursome last minute. That was that
last around, minute.
It was I pulled the plug and I said no. It was like 4 a.m. Got the call. I said, guys, we're not doing this. This is going to change everything. This cannot happen.
Right. I remember once, I remember trying to have a foursome with somebody, and it just kind of petered out. Where we started it and then everybody just kind of passed out.
Went their separate. Oh, I see.
Well, I think what we had done in Minneapolis in neighborhoods in Minneapolis in the summer, there are wading pools in all the parks. Just little fountainy wading pools.
I thought you were talking in terms of, that was like a sex term, wading pools. Okay,
oh,
I see.
No, right, actually, see. It's a way to stop riots.
I see.
And so the four of us, super drunk, of course, we go super high. We wade, we splash in the pool, we come back, and then we're like, ew, we're covered in the germs of our neighborhood. Let's all take a shower. So the four of us get into the shower. And this would have been the time when it would have happened.
Right.
And then we all just got out and put our pajamas on.
Yeah.
So
there was
we
one
were
night,
all nude at one point, though, together. Was that something? Is that exciting?
I think you can definitely, you can, on the census.
That counts.
You can
that
count
counts
that.
As something weird.
There was one night where a while back there was a bunch of men and women. We were at some, it was like a crazy night by a pool. And my friend that was very, very inebriated, my male friend, and he, I don't know if you see my full body, but I am rather feminine. And he was very excited the next day. He was like, guys, last night, I think I took a shower with Sheila. And no, that was like, he and I actually showered together. That was That was us. That was us.
Yeah, so, yeah, but, yeah. And was it nice?
It was, great. It was an outdoor shower.
Outdoor, that's the best. Indoor showering with another person, you're just like, somebody's cold. See, the thing is,
I am
possibly the most least romantic person I know. I try so hard with my husband. He is such a good sport.
I get complaints about that. I get the complaint that I'm not
particularly romantic.
Romantic, yeah. Yeah,
it's I've been it hasn't worked out yet, but I've been working on a bit called affection plagiarism,
tell me,
because it's essentially when Andy will do something, I'll be like, note to self, I liked that.
You do it back.
I should use that and as something to do. And then, you know, in the end, he doesn't care that I plagiarized it from him because he is receiving something nice. And I have possibly learned how to be a human being somewhere in the midst of all that.
Wow. Yes. Mm-hmm. Wow. I mean, it does definitely, you know, it is a conflict of IP, of course, but like.
It's true. He will see me in court.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Good. Good. And I hope you get your just desserts for this.
Bow, chicka, bow, bow. That would be my just desserts. We're we to make sweet, sweet love. And I say, no, it would be weird to go back to puppetry now. But the actually, I can't go to it. It's always at like minute 58 that I find out that there is something that we could have been talking about for the last 58 minutes. But you did give me a very nice list of things that you'd love to do and you love to talk about. And that's been kind of nice. It's been really great talking to you, Chris Fleming, but I don't.
Oh, yeah. This has been
lovely.
Like
I've done more talking. This is a classic instance of the Dork Forest where I'm like, God, I want this guy to like me. I should talk a lot.
You're doing fantastic. Are you kidding me?
We're friends now.
I've been completely, completely tickled by this. This has been so fun.
I have been entertained myself. So, Rangers, I hope you guys are having a good time because Chris and I are having excellent time.
You're doing the heavy lifting. So maybe, in fact, all you need is like a parakeet, like a little mirror and some beads. You know what I mean? Like that, because you're the one. I'm not really. You are being far more sparkling than I in this. You are bringing anecdotes. You are bringing charm. You are bringing wisdom.
Well,
and I'm just rambling a little bit about things I have a really hard time. I try to always ask if I'm asked a question, I try to then ask a question so I don't have to answer it. I just started therapy like for the first time. So I read that Bruce Springsteen didn't do therapy till he was 35. So I'm not even that big of a Bruce Springsteen fan. I don't know why I decided this, but I was like, I'm not going to do it till 35. But I just started a year early. And I thought that all I had to do was try to understand other people. I never really understood that I had to also understand myself.
Right.
And so that is a very terrifying thing, new thing for me.
Right.
To try to answer questions, openly.
Yes, yeah. I'm glad that Bruce Springsteen was your sort of springboard to that, even though you're not even a huge, I mean, I'm sure you're a normal fan of Bruce Springsteen, but nothing.
I'm very tolerant.
Sure. Open to it.
Yeah.
How is therapy? Is it treating you right?
No, it's not. I mean, like it's
in the ass.
What's really annoying is like, I was doing great. Like, I think that like, if you do enough years of not therapy, I think that you can make things work in a way that is like,
sure. You come up with skills.
Yes. You have skills. Exactly. And then it's like closer to enlightenment than when you first start doing it. So I'm like in kindergarten right now. I feel like I've become very, very dumb.
Oh, well, here's the weird thing. So Maria, the way Maria suggests Bamford, one of my best friends, picking a therapist is that you call various therapists, you listen to their answering machines, and if you like their voices, you leave a message.
Wow.
Because she's like, because if you don't like their voice, she's like, you will have a visceral reaction. Then when you talk to them, you know, sort of hear what they're saying, of course, but also sort of listen to how it feels when they're talking to you.
Isn't it wild how like we try so hard to be like above, just like it just comes down to whose smell you like,
right?
Like what's all these senses? It's embarrassing to be that simple, but yeah.
Well,
that's really
cool. And the crazy thing about therapy is that, like, I went through therapy back, I think it must have been 3 or 4 years of it, and I was probably in my late 30s. And what would I have been? Yes, I would have been in my late 30s. And and it was 3 or 4 years. And I decided that I was going to try to be as honest as possible. And she was, you know, right from the get-go, she was like, "You seem to drink a lot, Jackie. Have you thought about not drinking?" And I was like, no, that's one of my coping skills.
Yeah.
And she's like, "Okay, well then, $90. And then,
how do you get the bird's eye view without drinking? You know, it's like, it's so crucial.
And then she was like, "So what we'll do is we'll go through this stuff. And if you're willing to do the work, we should be able to process a lot of this stuff." She's like, "Don't try to make me laugh. You're paying me, remember. I'm not paying you."
Isn't that embarrassing when they're like, "I know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. Drop. It's like, what am I besides that then?
Right. Well, that's the whole thing, right? You have to find out what you are.
I don't want to know.
You know what you are? You're a child of the universe, my friend. And and the universe supports you and you are loved. So
that's good.
There's absolutely nothing.
A neighbor to the moon.
A neighbor to the moon. Have you watched, okay, now completely off course, have you watched a show on HBO Max called Ghosts?
Oh, but I like the sound of it.
It is a sitcom. It is 30 minutes. It is adorable. And there are only 2 seasons. And it is British. And there a couple inherits like this mansion in the middle of England. Yeah. And it is haunted and has been since cave days. Okay. And so the 5 characters or whatever, 6 ghosts that are living there, one is a caveman. One is an MP from the 80s, a member of parliament.
Okay.
There's Lady Button, the woman, the lady of the manor who owned it back in the 1700s or 1800s.
Lady Button.
There's a Regency poet. Like there's all these different characters, and the caveman was there before the mansion. And so he worships the moon and he calls it Moona. Moona. And it is actually incredibly moving whenever he talks about the fucking moon in the sitcom.
The moon is the best. The moon
is the bomb, man.
I do this part of my therapy that I have a grounding exercise every night where I have to kind of commune with the moon. And look at, try to find a tree that's moving a little bit. That is like what I find. Because that stemmed from one night when one morning that I had been overserved by myself margaritas in New York. And then the next morning I was very hungover. And the only thing, I'm kind of from a very rural place. So the only thing that brought me like regulated my nervous system was watching like leaves in a tree, you know?
Right.
And that, so I have to do something with the moon and watching these trees. And it's like, oh God, it's the best.
The moon is great. I'll tell you what else is really great. The wind.
Oh, hell
like
yeah.
We're at minute 58. We could have talked about things like the moon and the wind
you know
for
what else?
58 minutes.
Fog.
Oh, wow. Fog. Really?
Yeah, what do you think about fog?
I love fog. How about this? Lightning. Oh. I like thunder, lightning, and rain.
You know, people never believe me about this, but I promise you this is true. My cousin, she can back me up, and she's a Harvard-educated woman. She's not a charlatan like
hardest to get in, easy to get through. Go.
Yeah.
It's just a college once you get in, you guys. You're doing great.
That makes sense. That makes so much sense. But anyway, when we were really young, we were bunk beds, 4 of us. The 2 eldest asleep, me and the youngest, we're still awake because we're kind of mischief makers. Lightning storm, screen window, Cape Cod, a ball of light comes in through the screen.
Zzz, right.
I say, "Are you seeing this?" "Yes, I'm seeing this." And then it goes through the room, right over her. Out through the other screen, all lightning. And then we researched this. It's like a thing, I guess. Like after the advent of the internet, we started looking up light. And ball lightning is a form of lightning where it's just like a little orb that just like shows up and hangs out and runs errands and stuff.
I have never seen that. But there's something about thunder and rain and sitting on my porch in Wisconsin in the dark and just listening to it and going, all right, I can sleep now.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's, I think that's why those noise machines will often have rain and thunder. Yeah. Is because we have those memories from childhood, you
and
know?
Stampedes.
And stampedes, and then all of a sudden, horses.
And battle, revolutionary. My white noise is just a revolutionary reenactment.
Oh my God. Yeah. And so you're just like Washington, paddle harder.
Yeah.
We got to get over this river. Whisper, whisper, whisper.
Or just a man stuck in a cellar. That's another one. That's another option. It's another option.
And we're back to horror movies, you guys. Chris Fleming, it has been an hour.
Oh,
this
okay.
has been so much fun.
This has been a blast.
It's been so great getting to know you. I am sorry, but guess what? I bet you I could watch your live stream doing stand-up comedy on Zoom on March 23rd.
Yes.
And you've named that show Through the Baleen.
Yes. Do you like that?
Yes. So go to Chris Fleming Fleming on Instagram or Chris Fluming on Twitter.
Thank you so much, Jackie, for having me. This has been so fun.
Thank you. And Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
My hat, my hat, my hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat, my hat, my hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh, my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?